Action. Are you ready, Alabama?
Oh, the band is out on the field!
The band is leaving the field.
And one time, at band camp,
loved the drum.
Man, I do love my drum.
You say that's what she said one more time, I'm gonna pop you.
You're welcome to join the doghouse.
Oh God, I'm so sorry, I keep doing that.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
Be a dog.
The clock starts on my whistle.
How you doing?
It's time for the second half of the Tom Abraham Show. Here he is, the head of the household. Here's drum major Big Dog. It's Tom Abraham.
We strong.
You all may be taking the week off, right, this week, but I'm not.
Of the Tom Abraham Show. Glad that you are with us today on a Tradition Tuesday. Remember, a tradition today, the history of the preseason in the NFL. We'll get back and touch on some of that for those of you that missed the opening of the show. But joining us now, a guy that does a tremendous job with WNSP Radio down in Mobile and, of course, at AL.com. Craig Stevenson joins the show on a Woody Anderson Ford VIP Hotline. Craig, welcome back. How are you, man?
Doing well, Tom. How are you?
I am fantastic. And you know, in this time where, you know, we as radio hosts and you also as a writer, we have so much content that people want to consume about, you know, Alabama and Auburn and the SEC. And it's so difficult to kind of come up with different angles sometimes. But, it seems like the appetite is insatiable for our listeners and readers. But, you know, it's sometimes tough to pull something out of the stretch, you know, to give them.
Yeah, especially this year since they started practice a week earlier. It just seems like it's gone on long, long time. You know, we still got two more weeks. It's just like, let's get it over with already. Come on.
Yeah. Well, I like the angle that you took on the comparables and the expectations for Jalen Hurts and Jared Stidham. And let's just talk about that a little bit, because it would seem to me that there's a lot more on the weight of Stidham, even though Hurts is responsible for, you know, in a lot of ways for a couple of wins last year that helped propel Alabama all the way to a national championship game. It seems like there is a lot more that he might have to work with, especially defensively. Maybe not, you know, I don't know. According to Pat Dye, this is the most talented, you know, Auburn team he's ever seen, but we'll get to that in a moment. But it's kind of interesting to see all the pressure that's really on Stidham to not be Jeremy Johnson, or to not be, you know, what they thought John Franklin would be as a quarterback.
Yeah, and I don't buy those comparisons. It's easy to say that, but people remember Stidham was a pretty big time recruit coming out of high school. I mean, out of Texas too, which obviously had some of the best high school football in the country. Jeremy Johnson was Mr. Football, but still was not considered that great a prospect. And of course, John Franklin was a 3-star guy out of Florida. You know, couldn't win the starting job where he was, but I don't know. I mean, yes, you know, definitely we haven't seen a lot of Stidham. He hasn't played in 2 years, and even when he did play, it was against Big 12 defenses, so how can you judge that? Jalen Hurts obviously has a body of work, but he was a true freshman who struggled down the stretch. So is what we saw out of Jalen Hurts what we're going to get this year, or has he really improved? That's what we need to find out. I kind of studied both angles. With Stidham, there are more guys to compare him to just because what he has done is more common, guys who left other schools and transferred into the SEC.
Right.
Whereas with Hurts, there hasn't been a true freshman like Jalen Hurts. So it's almost impossible to compare him to anybody we've ever seen.
Yeah, and it would be reasonable. I mean, I know the expectation is that Hurts takes the next step and he is improving as a passer and so on. But there's also, I mean, that sophomore jinx thing is real. I mean, sometimes, you know, they like to say the biggest improvements between the first and second year, but other times now you've got all of this film out there. You've got what gave him trouble in the playoff, in both playoff games. You know, you would think that the defenses will make their adjustments as well. And to me, for him to improve in year two would be a hell of a feat.
Yeah, and not only that, he's got a new offensive coordinator. He's having to learn a new, you know, I don't know if it's a new system necessarily, but it's at least different terminology or different schematics than he has used in the past. And Brian Daboll, while it seems like Nick Saban has all the confidence in the world in him, we got to remember that he was fired from all three of his NFL offensive coordinator jobs,
right,
you know.
Right.
So, I, you know, it's almost – it's hard to say what to expect there. I expect him to get better. Is he going to become, you know, a cross between Michael Vick and RG3? I don't see that. But, I don't think he's going to be anything that's going to cost them any games this year.
When you were putting together comps, were you looking at the way they played their game? Because I find it fascinating to look at the Nick Marshall comp, you know, where Nick Marshall, you know, wins a national or plays for a national championship, wins an SEC title his first year out, then comes back his second year, has decent numbers, but they, you know, they lose four of their last five down the stretch and, you know, end up an 8-5 type team. I don't think that's going to happen to Alabama, but I think it's an interesting comparable to look at him like Nick Marshall. And I think some people underestimate what kind of a passer Marshall was. He completed 61% of his passes.
Yeah, you know, it's not perfect. I think Marshall was certainly much more of a runner first than Hurts is, even though Hurts can run, we know that.
Right.
But it's not exactly perfect. If we're going to compare somebody to Hurts, at least stylistically, maybe Deshaun Watson. I'm not saying he's going to be that good, but you know, Watson was a guy who could run but also could pass. So, you know, and then, of course, I threw in A.J. McCarron and Greg McElroy, who are nothing like Nick or
right.
nothing like either Nick Marshall or Jalen Hurts, but they are guys who, you know, became starters as young players on championship teams and then came back the next year and played pretty well again. Tim Tebow, it's not really fair to compare anybody to Tebow, but, you know, at least stylistically, he's similar to Hurts.
Yeah, I think there is that comparison that can be made. And again, Tim Tebow completing 64% of his passes, but it was a Urban Meyer offense that led to some real wide open. That was always the thing that I was amazed by Urban Meyer's offense at Florida, was how open people seemed to be all the time. But, you know, Tebow had that 50 touchdown year and all that crazy stuff as well. So that might be tough. The Deshaun Watson thing is not that far off. Keeping in mind, we think of Deshaun Watson as a senior. We got to remember that was Jalen Hurts as a freshman. If Jalen Hurts makes that decision that Deshaun Watson made to play out the string and go the distance, he may be that guy in his fourth year.
Yeah, there's nothing to say he can't be. I mean, Watson was a very good recruit, big time recruit. Was he that much better than Hurts? I can't really say. But he was in the same system for 3 years and got better as he went along. He did have the knee injury that took away his running game for a time, but he was able to come back from that. So, you know, it's hard to say if Hurts is going to take the leap, but people that are just looking at him against Washington and in the second half against Clemson and saying, we can't throw the ball to that guy, I think that's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. Craig Stevens with us from AL.com. All right, the Stidham comps were interesting. All transfers
yep.
you looked at. Javon Sneed, who transferred to Ole Miss out of Texas. And of course, Ryan Mallett, who famously had gone to Michigan. I saw him play, actually, in the Army All-Star game and thought he was going to be the stuff. I thought by now he would be a big-time NFL quarterback, and it hasn't really worked out there. Zach Mettenberger and Jake Coker. Now, you know, Alabama, some Auburn fans might bristle at the Jake Coker comparison because, you know, Coker couldn't beat out Blake Sims when he first came over, and Stidham obviously is ready to go now.
Yeah, well, Coker went 14-0.
The second year. Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, you're right. He did, he didn't beat out Blake Sims when he got there. But he was a graduate transfer, so he came in the summer, so it was a little different than Stidham. He didn't get to go through the spring. That probably set him back a little bit. I think Blake Sims really was kind of a similar situation to Sean White, where the team just loved him. You know, and we're very happy when Blake Sims ended up winning that job. And obviously, turned in a really good senior year for Alabama, led him to the SEC championship, had his limitations as well. So maybe they, you know, not quite good enough to put him over the top into the national, you know, for a national title. But, stylistically, it's not much of a comparison because Stidham's probably a better runner. But I, the one that kind of jumps out to me, though, I think is Jevon Snead. He was kind of careless with the ball at times when he was at Ole Miss, but when he was on, he was really good. You know, the first year he was there, They went down to Florida and beat the eventual national champions in that 31-30 memorable game. Put up some decent numbers. He kind of fell apart his last year at Ole Miss, but when he first got there, he was solid. And, you know, I would, if somebody asked me, what is Jarrett Stidham going to be this year, I would say Jevon Snead with fewer interceptions. I think that's a pretty good baseline.
And then, of course, there's the reasonable or unreasonable expectations of how that transfers to the team, because there are so many other parts. I'm a big believer that winning is very important for quarterbacks. But, you know, when you talk about Zach Mettenberger in 2012 and Coker at Alabama in 2015, I mean, they also had outstanding defenses. Now, that Auburn defense looks like it could be pretty salty, no question about it. But this schedule is you know, borderline brutal, you know, at Clemson, at LSU. Iron Bowl is always the Iron Bowl, even though they'll have it at home. Still got to go to Texas A&M and win a football game there. Still got to go to Arkansas and win a football game there. I have them at 9-3. I don't know if that satisfies the natives, but I don't think it's unrealistic that that could be the number. A huge game, obviously, the Clemson game will determine what the first half of the season looks like. They'll be 6-0 if they beat Clemson.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that Clemson game is going to tell us a lot. Told me to bet how many wins Auburn's going to have this year, I would say 9 as well. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're quite good enough to challenge Alabama in the West, but I think they're as good or better than everybody else they're going to play in the SEC. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to beat Clemson up there. I mean, Clemson did lose Deshaun Watson, but let's remember they've got practically everybody back on the defensive front seven and all but one offensive lineman back. So they're going to be really solid in the trenches. I don't know that Auburn's going to be able to handle them that way. But, you know, I look for Auburn to be slightly better than they were last year. And if Stidham comes in and is the real deal, maybe they can be better than that. But still, I would be very surprised if they challenge Alabama in the West.
Yeah, Craig Stevenson with us, AL.com and WNSP Radio in Mobile. All right, finally, you know, I'm in the midst of reading the Phil Savage book, and it's outstanding. I mean, it's just tremendous. And
It really is.
I'm just about through with it. But one of the things I found fascinating was, you know, we always talk about Nick Saban's coaching tree, and it, you know, everybody knows about Will Muschamp and Jim McElwain and Jimbo Fisher. But there's a dozen guys out there. There's a dozen guys out there that are head football coaches, including people like Jason Garrett of the Dallas Cowboys and of course, Mark D'Antonio at Michigan State that are former Saban coaches. And as we get to that time, and I know it's probably now 3, 4, 5 years down the road, I look down this list. I don't know if the guy who follows the guy is on this list. You know what I mean? You don't want to really be the guy that follows the guy. You want to be the guy that follows the guy that followed the guy. I'm still a Dabo Sweeney guy. I love Dabo, you know. But it's interesting as you look at it. Could you see any of these guys be candidates that are former Saban coaches that are out there now as head coaches?
It's a good question. Obviously, the timing makes a difference. I'm of the opinion that, you know, Saban has that clause in his contract where if he finishes the 2021 season, he gets a big bonus. He'll be 70 years old at that point. So I'm looking at that as probably the most likely exit date, barring a health crisis, as we've, you know, seen with other coaches. But
5 years in, 5 seasons, you're thinking?
Five more years. I have always thought that it would be Dabo Swinney, but, you know, Dabo could think, well, I've got everything I want here. You know, only thing that Alabama's is just too much pressure. There's, you know, nobody's ever going to be satisfied with anything I ever do there. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it is his home. I think Alabama is the only place he would leave Clemson for. I just don't know if it's going to happen. If it's not him, it's hard to say. I mean, Kirby Smart's not going to leave Georgia. He can have everything he wants at Georgia
place.
That he could get at Alabama, and he's a Georgia guy. Mm-hmm. Same with Jimbo Fisher at Florida State. You know, if he wasn't going to take the LSU job, he's probably not going to take Alabama. I mean, looking down the list, unless they possibly groom Jeremy Pruitt to take over.
See, that's
the
guy.
Only thing I could think. But with Pruitt, he would almost have to leave and go somewhere else and then come back, because I don't think Alabama's going to make the mistake of giving that job to a first-time head coach again.
See, that's the guy that I said in the first hour. Jeremy Pruitt is, you know, because he's an Alabama guy, that's home for him. Now, would he leave? You know, he's been bouncing around now. He was at Florida State and Georgia, and it's his second year at Alabama. Would he wait 5 years, or would he be a candidate. Ole Miss, there's going to be other jobs opened all over the country. You know, maybe it would be prudent, you know, for him to go get that head coaching experience. But I think that's always going to be something when he starts interviewing for jobs. If it starts as early as this next season, he's going to have to answer that question, because then it's 4 years out until Saban is 70. And I agree with you. I think that's the absolute max. That's the Spurrier number. That's where it ends up ending, where it gets very, very difficult to recruit and so on. But, you know, everywhere he interviews, the question's going to be, are you going to leave if Alabama comes calling? And he's going to have that in his contract if he's that guy. You know, if they continue to play great defense, right. I think Pruitt can be a guy. Major Applewhite, you know, if his star starts rising, you know, I don't see that happening. I don't know about
I don't know that. Well, the thing is, assuming Saban is still alive, I don't know that he would endorse Major Applewhite, because he did fire him after 1 year.
Yeah, that's true. You know, the NFL guys.
You're right. I mean, the guy that it may eventually be may not have emerged yet. It could be anybody. It could be, you know, a head coach at another Power 5 school who makes a real charge in the next few years. I'm racking my brain to come up with one. Pruitt is interesting, as you mentioned. I know for a fact that if South Alabama were to come open, he would be interested in that job. Now that he's at Alabama, he may have kind of pushed himself out of the market for that job, but a couple of years ago, I think he was interested. I think Kevin Steele obviously was also interested in South Alabama. That's beside the point. But if Pruitt were to go somewhere like a South Alabama, get a few years in, and then leave for Alabama, I could see that. But you know, you're right. I don't see him. I don't see somebody like Ole Miss or Texas. You know, Texas A&M is not going to hire him, but Ole Miss or Tennessee or somewhere like that hiring him, with the idea that Alabama's going to be open in a couple of years.
Yeah, I'm not as negative as you are about Jimbo Fisher, though. I mean, not taking the LSU job is one thing. I think LSU and Florida State are comparable jobs. I think Alabama would be just a notch above. If there is a notch above, it might be. I know he was close to leaving there a few years ago. I thought he was going to be the coach at Tennessee. They did some things to improve the facilities and so on, and let's see how good they are. I mean, if he gets that elusive second championship, you know, then that puts him in that, you know, in that Saban Urban Meyer group of multiple championship guys. There's only four of them out there that have won a championship. And, you know, of course, he and Dabo won. But, you know, it's a different thing when you get that second one. So it'll be interesting to see if he goes five more years without winning one. You know, I don't know what the deal is. But you're right. Maybe that guy's not out there. Maybe we can't identify that guy yet as easily as we would think.
Yeah. This is a name that just occurred to me, and I don't see it as likely. But what do you think about somebody like Dan Mullen?
That would be interesting. I mean, that would be he would have been at Ole Miss, if, you know, assuming that he doesn't leave. He would have been at Mississippi State for what, 10, 11 years by then, 12, 13 years. What's he, 7 years in, 8 years in, something like that?
08 was his first year. So yeah.
And he's actually the guy who says he loves Starkville. I mean, that's the thing. You know, when he had other opportunities to leave, his family loves Starkville. Who loves Starkville? But he does, you know, his kids will be. I mean, part of it has been his kids in high school and all that stuff. So Dan Mullen's a very interesting name. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, I think that if Harbaugh had not taken Michigan, he would have probably been their number one choice there. I also think that if Georgia had gone a little bit smart, or if they had you know, if Kirby Smart had turned it down, he possibly could have been a candidate there, because Greg McGarrity was with him at Florida.
Yeah.
But, he's almost getting into that Gary Patterson territory where it's like, or Frank Beamer even, you stay there so long, you turn down so many jobs that people finally quit asking.
Yeah. Man.
But then again, Chris Peterson.
I was going to say Chris Peterson too. I mean, would he ever come to the Dirty South? You know, I mean, I think they're going to be very good again this year out there.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. And again, you do have to deal with that, being the guy that follows the guy. I mean, they may have a little bit of a problem to get that guy. You want to be the guy that follows the guy that followed the guy. Very, very rarely do you get what happened with Jimbo Fisher following Bobby Bowden and keeping that train rolling. So it'll be interesting for sure. All right, Craig, I appreciate you so much, man. Always doing a great job. We love reading your stuff. You do some of the most compelling stuff at AL.com, and I look forward to talking to you again. It won't be long now, man. A couple of weeks. 1 week, 1 week till we get real college football, really. We just don't get all of our stuff until the second. But there's a pretty good slate of games coming up on the 26th. So we'll have college football for real pretty soon.
All right, man. Well, have a great day.
All right. Appreciate you. Greg Stevenson. It's good work there. All right, let's get a break. We'll come back with more right after this. It's the Tom Abraham Show. It's 730-1039.
Are you ready, Alabama? It's time to enter the doghouse.
Wait a minute. How can you do a mock fantasy football draft? It's fantasy already. How can you do a mock fantasy draft? Isn't that redundant? Welcome back, Tom Abraham Show. Joe Galina joining us now from rotoexperts.com, where he does a tremendous job as a fantasy football expert. And Tuesdays will be our day because, you know, this is our opportunity, you know, sit them and pick them up and drop them and all those other kind of things that you do. And so we'll be doing our fantasy football piece on Tuesdays. And we have, you know, T-Mac, you know, we have a fantasy football open. I mean, what the heck? Yeah, I mean, you gotta knock the rust off, boy.
Hey, look, there are things that weren't covered when I
you
used
need
to just
to
run
go through all of
a week. All right,
go on to Tom Abraham Show page there and go through all of this stuff. We got like Fantasy Football Open and Voices of the SEC Open. And we got, you know, that guy before you, the guy that was the guy before the guy. That guy made a lot of, you know, he made elements. And he did stuff like that. Joe Galina joins us now. Maybe we should play like the theme from Sopranos or something like that when Galina comes on. Joe, welcome in. How are you, man?
I'm great. How are you, Big Dog?
Would that work for you? Like the Sopranos theme, you know, with fantasy, you know, cuts over the top of it, maybe something like that? You're a Jersey guy,
yeah,
aren't you?
That sounds great, yeah.
Are you a Jersey guy? Are you on the west side of the river or the east side of the river?
I live in Staten Island, so I'm right.
You're way over on. You're way over there, Annie. Yeah, yeah. You're way over on the east side of the river. All right. How do you have a mock fantasy draft? I mean, isn't that redundant? I mean, it's already fantasy. How can you do a mock fantasy?
Yeah, I guess it is redundant. But for everyone playing season long drafts, I really highly recommend that they do as many of these mock drafts. And you're right, it's kind of redundant, but I recommend that everyone do as many as they can. This way they get a feel for when players start to come off the board, and they get a feel for what their team will look like depending on where they're drafting, you know, what location, you know, from the back of the draft or early on.
But you're assuming that
useful tool.
You're assuming that the knuckleheads in my league know what the hell they're doing, you know, and when they're making a pay. I mean, they might look nothing. How does the mock draft work at Roto Experts? Like, you jump in with the mock, and then everything else is what, the computer or the experts or what? I mean, how does that work?
No, actually, how we figured it out was it was a slow mock draft, meaning all the writers and the broadcasters got together. Someone would make a pick, and then you'd have you know, 6 to 8 hours to make another pick. So,
oh, geez.
It was just a snake draft.
It'd be over like the third week of the season. The thing would still be going on. Maybe
you know, it did take some time. Yes.
How much? Let me ask you this: how much juice is there for college fantasy? Is it? I know you got Joe Lisi who's working on that, but is it something? Yeah, is it something that's taken off or what?
No.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
No, not really. Especially in the Northeast, you know. I mean, we do like to watch our college football, but the focus is, it's amazing, Tom, how early the focus turns to fantasy football, professional fantasy football. You know, yeah. It's getting earlier and earlier every year. This season started in like June 1st.
Right. The thing that would drive me nuts on it is that you've got these games against teams that are, you know, these toss away games, you know, and in the NFL, I mean, every game is, I mean, there's no, you know, Georgia States and, you know, Mercers and things like that in the NFL, you know what I mean? And it would, to me, that would like throw all the numbers off, you know, when you have a game like that.
and the universe in college is huge as well, you know? So, yeah. I mean, but like I said, I mean, the focus, I mean, you can't imagine how many more hits we get on the site once the focus moves from fantasy baseball to fantasy football. I mean, fantasy baseball is popular, but once we flip the switch to football, things get really rolling.
Would you say that the old rotisserie league, you know, fantasy baseball is where it kind of all started. Would you say that fantasy baseball is number two behind, you know, pro football or you know, basketball? Because basketball and hockey, although there's money to be made there, are probably, I would think, a smaller, deal.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely fantasy football is number one. Fantasy baseball, number two. And then you have basketball and hockey. And, you know, when we start to turn into the fantasy baseball season, everyone gets excited because, you know, thoughts of warm weather, you know, start floating around in your head. But and don't get me wrong, it is still popular. And DFS has also helped to pump up fantasy baseball as well, the daily games. But football is king.
Yeah. All right. Did you see anything that would change anything through this first week now of the first complete week of the preseason? Is there anything that made you say, you know, that Dante Freeman guy looked pretty good for Houston. I might need to put him a little higher on my list. Was there anybody that you thought about moving around off of that, off of what you've seen so far?
Well, I'll tell you, I was very impressed with those rookie running backs. I mean, Joe Mixon was everything as advertised. If you saw him, you know, mm-hmm. make his moves, and obviously, I mean, an abbreviated play, but obviously some good pass catching skills as well. And Fournette looked really good too, like he could move piles. And unfortunately, now he's got a little bit of a foot injury. But I also was impressed with Christian McCaffrey with the speed, the elusiveness. I mean, he's got a bit of a small stature, but sometimes that helps him. Sneak into piles and then just dart out of them. Tough to bring down. So I was impressed with some of the rookie running backs.
Yeah, and the rookie running backs are more apt to do something than the rookie quarterbacks, right? I mean, because the rookie quarterbacks aren't, you know, those guys aren't going to play. I mean, you know, who knows? I mean, Kaiser and Trubisky could end up being the starters, and Watson in Texas or in Houston could end up being the starters. But they'll be so erratic, you would think that they would. But the rookie running backs, we've seen rookie running backs have big and productive years.
Yeah, we saw Ezekiel Elliott, right? I mean, and he's been in the news so much the past few days. But, yeah, I agree with you. You know, wide receivers are, from time to time, they could have immediate impacts. Look at Michael Thomas from last season. Mm-hmm. But if I'm banking on any rookies, It's going to, position wise, I think that running backs do have a better chance of making an impact sooner than any other position. And you're right about quarterbacks. I mean, quarterbacks, sometimes it takes a quarterback a couple of years just to get, accustomed to playing in the NFL.
By the way, if you have a question that you want Joe to address on fantasy football, go ahead and hit the text window, 732-982-7469. It's 732-982-7469, and I'll get it out there. I forgot to tell you that ahead of time, but if you want to hit me and I see it, I'll get you hooked up there. Plus, Joe's a good follow on the Twitter as well. Joe, give me your Twitter handle.
It's at Joe Gallina, JoeGallina. Follow me. You can ask me questions. I'd like to put information out there, retweeting and my own opinions as well.
So it's just that. How did you get at Joe Gallina? I mean, wasn't there like a whole list of Joe Gallinas that wanted to have that? You would think that it would have been tough to get.
I took care of business, Tom.
Oh, I hear you. Okay. You know a guy that knows a guy? Because if you got a guy that knows a guy, then you can get that deal done. All right, receivers. Odell Beckham, he wants to be the highest paid receiver in the NFL. I don't think he's the number one receiver in fantasy football in the NFL. Are you on OBJ or OB, whatever, Odell Beckham?
Well, to me, without question, it's Antonio Brown is the number one wide receiver. If you look at some rankings, some will put Julio Jones as the number two wide receiver. I'm a little worried with Julio Jones in terms of his past injury proneness. But look, Beckham, I could push for Beckham maybe to be in number two, but you can't forget about, you know, guys like Mike Evans and A.J. Green. I mean, the wide receiver class is pretty deep.
It's deep, but do you got to use a strategy involved there, you know, when you're taking these guys in terms of them being the one, number one guy? Like Mike Evans, I like Mike Evans a lot. You know, but now they've brought in DeSean Jackson. You wonder whether or not that cuts into the action. That might be a better team with less yards out of Mike Evans because they'll have more balance. Do you worry about that as opposed to getting a guy that's going to be the, you know, the definite number one guy for that particular team? That's why I like Julio Jones. I think Julio Jones would be a monster until there is an injury. You know, I would like to have Julio Jones.
If you believe preseason news is that the Falcons are going to try to get him more involved in the red zone. So, I mean, look, don't get me wrong. Julio Jones is a phenomenal wide receiver. I'm concerned over the persistent injuries to his foot, which, you know, have bothered him over the past couple of years. But when you bring up Mike Evans and DeSean Jackson, Evans, you know, defenses are going to have to play back and watch for Jackson's big playability. And don't worry about Mike Evans. He's still going to be heavily targeted. I'll give you one example of how maybe to use strategy in drafting your wide receivers. I mean, Amari Cooper is basically, you know, top 12, top 10 wide receiver rank-wise. But, you know, I think I'd rather have Crabtree. Michael Crabtree, you could get him a couple of rounds later, and he's putting up very similar type numbers to Amari Cooper.
Well, you talk about Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree. That's another example of guys that'll probably split that action there. Both very, very good receivers and kind of pretty much connected at the hip, right? I mean, I think that one or the other, Cooper or Crabtree, you know, either one of those guys, Cooper may be more a guy that's going to give you that downtown touchdown. I think Crabtree is actually targeted more inside the red zone and the high red zone, you know, what coaches call the high red zone, which would be the 20 to the 40. You know, I think that, you know, Crabtree actually might be that guy more, whereas Cooper's more of a home run guy.
Right. And like I said, I mean, if you look at their statistics, they're fairly similar, but I agree with you with the red zone observation there. But to me, the biggest thing is that Crabtree, to me, has a little bit more value because you could get him later in drafts than Cooper.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I know some people got Crabtree just ahead of Cooper as well. I mean, it depends on how. Now, if your league is a PPR league versus one that's not a PPR league, how would that change your rankings? You know, who are guys that you would move up or down based on whether it was a PPR league or not a PPR league?
Well, like a
that's
Jarvis
per reception
is a very good example of someone
for those who don't know.
Who's phenomenal in PPR leagues because, you know, he's getting 85 to 95 receptions per year, but he doesn't score a lot of touchdowns. So he's a good example of someone that you'd want in a PPR format. In a standard format, I kind of like a guy like Martavis Bryant, who's shown that, you know, he's a touchdown magnet. He might not get as many targets and receptions as an Antonio Brown, but he's shown that he knows how to find the end zone.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, those of you in the DFL or who are getting into the DFL, if you want to go ahead and send us a text on whether or not you want the league to be a PPR league or not, go ahead and do that. I mean, you know, we haven't made those decisions yet. So if you want to go ahead and hit the text window with that, 732-982-7469, let us know. Last year, I don't think we were a PPR league. I think, this year, though, maybe we do go that route. Sammy Watkins, does your impression of him change now that he's out there with the Rams? He goes from, you know, one quarterback situation to another that's not great. But, you know, does it change the scenery? Maybe he's healthy. Does any of that change, you know, where you might look at a guy like that?
Yeah. So the first thing, obviously, is what you just mentioned, health, because he's had health problems throughout his NFL career. But, yeah, I mean, he drops slightly because, I mean, basically, he's obviously got a worse quarterback that's throwing him the ball. Goff, hopefully, it'll progress this season with, you know, a new coaching regime. But look, Watkins is obviously going to still be the number one wide receiver for the Rams, but it's just in a weaker offense. And so I think that PPR-wise, I think he's still going to be very viable. He might take a little bit of a hit in a standard league where touchdowns are more important just because of the kind of a weaker offense that he's part of now in L.A.
Joe Galina with us, Roto experts, talking some fantasy football. All right, sleepers. I don't know if he's a sleeper or not, but Terrell Pryor, to me, he had a big year last year, but he had a huge year this year in Washington. What are your thoughts? So give me a couple of sleeper names that you like, guys that you might snag in late rounds, you know, 8, 9, 10, whatever, and end up being a guy that produces for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do love Pryor. I think Cousins needs to replace those targets that he lost. And one of those guys that he lost is Pierre Garçon, who's now the number one wide receiver in San Francisco. And now, you know, the 49ers aren't going to be a very good team, but they're going to be playing from behind. And Garçon has shown that he's a good receiver. So I like him as a sleeper. I also like, going back to Washington, Jameson Crowder. He and Cousins really had a good connection last season. Very good red zone wide receiver. And this weekend we saw Kenny Galladay for the Lions score a couple of touchdowns. Now, deep in drafts, we're talking, like you said, maybe 10, 11, 12 rounds or so. He might not be a bad option if you look at what Anquan Boldin did in the last season. He might be able to become a good red zone target for Matthew Stafford.
All right, by the way, the guys are hitting my text window with no PPR. Where are you on that? I mean, do you prefer the PPR league or a no PPR league? And also, what about a two quarterback league instead of having a defense or a kicker or something like that? What do you prefer?
I prefer a PPR league. There are some that prefer to play in a standard league. So, why don't we do just that? Instead of one full point per reception, we could do either a half point per reception. Mm-hmm. This way we kind of meet in the middle. And I think last week I told you about a league where you got a point per first down.
First
league,
down, I like
which,
that.
Changes kind of like the dynamics of a league. And the two quarterback leagues, yeah. I mean, typically – in one quarterback leagues, especially with people who know what they're doing in season-long drafts, you could wait to the 9th, 10th round to get a really good quarterback. Wow. But two quarterback leagues adds another dimension to a draft where, it adds some importance to the quarterback position.
If you have a second quarterback, do you automatically do away with something else, or can you do a two quarterback league and still have a defense or a kicker or get rid of the kicker? Yeah, I wouldn't mind getting rid of the kicker for a second quarterback.
I know leagues that have gotten rid of kickers, and in a way, I'm all for it. I mean, I know kickers are people too, but
not really. But
you can still have defense and a kicker, but it wouldn't be a bad idea in a two quarterback league to kind of get rid of that kicker position.
Yeah, I like to have a defense, but I'm a defensive guy, so that's a different, that's a whole other thing. All right, next week, everybody's got to have a tight end, and a tight end sometimes can be very, very a valuable guy. So we'll talk tight ends next time. We'll talk some defenses next time and some strategies for the draft. I'm still this whole bit of not taking a quarterback till the 8th or 9th round, and I'm having a hard time look, if Aaron Rodgers is on the board in that first round, I'm taking a guy. I rode him to the championship last year. I can't let A-Rod go to somebody else. I would feel dirty if A-Rod was for somebody else. So I may have to do that. But anyway, we'll see. I appreciate you as always, Joe Galina. Follow him on the Twitter at Joe Galina. Amazing. He was able to get that. G-A-L-I-N. Did I spell it right? G-A. How many L's are in that, Galina?
Two L's.
All right. So there you go.
And
two L's.
Go to Fantasy Radio, FNTSY Radio. Download the app. You can catch free content as well anytime. You can still listen to the Big Dog and listen to the Fantasy Radio station as well.
Beautiful. Yeah, you can listen to that on podcast. And they can listen to this interview on podcast as well later on at our app and at our website and at our Facebook page. And, everything's going to podcast now. So
I know now we're on TuneIn and iHeart. We're all over the place.
Yeah.
It's amazing where you could find content today, right?
All right, man. Appreciate you as always.
I appreciate you too, Big Doug. Have a good one.
All right, thank you. Buggy says no PPR league. Rex says no PPR league. Volman says, what the hell is a PPR league? Points per reception. In other words, you get, you know, points per reception. I don't know.
Are you sure you didn't get a text in there from Hollywood asking if we were doing a fantasy draft?
Now, see, Rex says no points per reception unless you get a point per rush. Now, that's different. I mean, rush, you just hand a guy the ball. That doesn't count. But a point per reception is an interesting dynamic. It changes the strategy, what kind of guys you're drafting. You get that guy that gets 8 receptions for 74 yards then, you know what I mean? I don't know. I think I like the two quarterbacks. I think I like two quarterbacks and no kicker. The old special teams coordinator wants to cut the kicker. But I think two quarterbacks would be good. We'll have to do some fantasy poll questions. See how we're going to build our league. All right, McKringleberry, come back to the show. Fantasy section is over. By the way, I get more text messages and more reaction to fantasy stuff than anything else. I know a lot of you is it glasses your eyes over, but, you know, nobody's hit me with text messages about who should be the next coach at Alabama and how long will Nick Saban be there and whether or not one of the 12 coaches that are head coaches under, you know, that come off the Saban tree are going to be even considered for that gig. But, man, I got fantasy football questions up the yin-yang. We'll be back. Tom Abraham Show, 730-1039 AM.
Rumors spreading around in that Texas town.
So clearly let the conspiracy theorists go into, you know, wide up. Clearly, Nick Saban called Lane Kiffin and said, hey, I want you to offer something really good and recruit the hell out of JF3. I don't want that guy at Auburn. Get him out of there. And so Lane Kiffin got John Franklin III to leave Auburn and go and play for him at Florida Atlantic. It's obvious. I mean, it's clear. Let's get an update. It's a Doghouse Sports Report.
The Atlanta Braves dropped their first of four games to the first of four game series to the Rockies with a score of 3-0. You can hear game two of that series tonight right here on the Ump. Coverage will start at 7:25. As the Big Dog mentioned, Auburn football player and former Last Chance U star John Franklin III will transfer from Auburn. Head coach Gus Malzahn announced that he has made a decision to play elsewhere this season as a grad transfer. No word
so
on
does
Gus.
Does that make this the last chance? I mean, is FAU now Last Chance FAU?
Well, there's no word on Gus Malzahn either mentioning Nick Saban's conspiracy theory just yet. Okay. Ezekiel Elliott has officially filed an appeal of his 6-game suspension handed down by the NFL for his role in a domestic violence incident. A big part of Zeke's strategy is to challenge the credibility of his accuser. Elliott's appeal will be heard in a hearing with Goodell or an arbitrator if he so chooses. The hearing will be scheduled promptly, according to the NFL. And CBS reveals their booth pairings for the 2017 football season, which includes the lead announcing team of Jim Nance, Tony Romo, and Tracy Wolfson. Romo will make his debut August 25th in the Chiefs-Seahawks preseason game. The trio makes their regular season debut in week one for the Titans-Raiders game. Also, Beth Mowins was announced to become the first female play-by-play caller for the network's NFL game. She will call Browns-Colts on September 24th. I'm Tony Mack, and that is your Doghouse Sports Report.
How many colleges does this make for JF3?
It'll be his fourth in 5 years.
Fourth in 5 years. So JF3 with four schools. You'd be JF4.
I like that.
So multiple. So fourth in 5 years. I'm amazed that he got his degree. I mean, you know, it's hard transfer. I know my son, when he transferred from Alabama to Middle Tennessee, had a hard time transferring some credits. And, you know, it's go to that many schools. JUCO, Last Chance.
Yeah, he went
first
from,
chance, we next
from,
chance.
From Florida State to EMCC to Auburn and to now FAU.
So FAU would be Next Chance U.
Well, you know, this makes the third player from EMCC for Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin has now taken three players from Last Chance U.
Well, sure.
Including the quarterback from Florida State, DeAndre Johnson, who hit a woman in a bar.
Yeah. Question is, can he hit JF3 in a flat?
We'll find out.
That's just wrong.
That was a good one, though. That was funny.
I'll share with you the actual comments of JF3 and what he said, because it's a little weird. It's Tom Abraham Show. Fab 5 is next. Phone lines will be open at 730-1039. Yep.